what's an interesting story of when you were younger? Something that, like, just funny, quirky, that people... I didn't know. I wasn't going to tell you that I was asking this because I didn't know until I asked it.
Yeah, well... Jeez, I actually... Funny, interesting story.
Yeah, or not funny, just a story from when you were younger. Or what?
I don't really remember much of my childhood, to be honest.
Wow, repressed it. Good, I like
Asian
it.
Families, man, it's all about... can I swear on this?
Yeah, you can swear, bro. Safe space.
It's all about fucking doing the homework, getting good grades. But at the end of the day, also, my parents weren't as strict as some of the, you know, the Asian tiger mums out there.
Tiger mums, yeah.
There's a saying for it. But no, I actually had a pretty chill, good childhood.
What's your homework tips then? If you were just like savagely, did you do okay at school?
Nah, not really, to be honest. Just did the bare minimum just to pass, to be honest.
What was your favorite subject?
Shit.
You just hated school.
I just hated it, actually, to be fair.
Yeah, wow, okay.
To be honest, though, I did. There was not one subject I really enjoyed.
Wow.
Funny enough.
Did anyone pick on you? Because you know weren't doing well. Like, were you a jock, a nerd? Like, what kind of... Obviously not
I don't
a nerd.
Know. Nerd? Yeah,
nerd? Yeah. But a nerd that wasn't doing good at school?
Nah.
That's tough.
Yeah, it was pretty tough, bro.
Jeez. All right, well, I feel like I just, like, put you on the spot. But what about... Okay, so, you know, you got out of school, the hellhole that was school. And then what happened? What was your trajectory of life?
So what happened was after... high school, so after NCEA, got into uni, and then most of my mates got into engineering. So this is the backstory, and I didn't get into engineering because my credits were crap. So you needed physics to really get into it, and I was just like, shit, this is not going to work. So I jumped into science, so got the accreditation, is what it's called. University entrance through, obviously, NCEA, and then got into science. And then I found a pathway to get into engineering, which was either 6 months or 1 year. And then I did 6 months, and then I had a couple of mates that were also on the same path, and they got into engineering after 6 months, and then my grades were still bad. I was like, shit, man, what the hell's going on? Mm. And then I realized I should have really put more effort into my homework because that would have given me the backbone. And then that's actually one lesson in life, which is you can't create shortcuts. Yeah. Because I think most of the time it's like, oh, how do I get around things? And then you take shortcuts, and then it really does backfire. And that was actually my first lesson, was just you can't take shortcuts. And so I did another 6 months of science, and then I finally got my entrance into engineering. So instead of a four-year degree, it was actually 5 years. But it was good because I met a lot of good friends. Yeah.
There's a good quote that aligns with don't take shortcuts is the longest way around is the shortest way home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got an engineering, hated it.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say I hated it.
It wasn't your calling.
No. Well, I graduated and then did four years for a contractor. So for an Australian firm, and then
what's it like being an engineer? What do you actually like, what kind of engineer were you firstly?
So civil. I finished a civil.
And that means like fixing roads and shit?
Yeah, roads. Yeah. Well, the first job that I did was actually a water pipeline, the Hanua 4.
Okay.
So it was a water care pipeline. It was a big fucking water main. It was like 2 meter in diameter. You could walk through it. So,
wow. Hope you didn't turn it on by accident.
No, but I did the commissioning on it. So I did turn it on. Whoa. I did the first, I think 6Ks.
Do they show you like work health and safety issues? Like someone turned it on and it was hectic in New Zealand. Like when I was a garbage man, this guy dropped his sunglasses in.
Yeah.
And he lost his arm. That's why we always have to use 2 points of contact because some guy got a bit optimistic.
Yeah. It was like that in construction.
Wow.
Yeah. Everything has to be, written down. Like, what is your steps to do? Because even picking up a fucking shovel.
Was there something sus? Like, did this something questionable health and safety thing? Name and shame?
No, not really. I think at the end of the day, it's making sure that everyone goes home safe to their families because it is pretty high risk.
Yeah.
And especially when you're working with a big, big machinery, diggers, plant. So you just got to be aware. For example, you know, they were working under high voltage power lines and they didn't want the diggers to obviously hit them. So they, you know, put in flags and all that and came up with a strategy. There's actually quite a bit of, bit of work into that.
Well, it's different from our one. We didn't have a handbrake. We had to lean it into the curve.
Shit.
Yeah. Oh, dude, there's so much stuff like that. I'm like, really? So it must, maybe because you go to uni, you guys are like all extra more careful. But like, my understanding is like people are cutting corners and they're cutting corners badly.
Yeah.
Because of money.
Yeah.
So maybe you just worry about the fallout.
I think it's the fallout. Because obviously the fallout of someone dying, you don't want that.
No, it's awful. There's another one where it wasn't us, but they told a story about like, they brought a Japanese or Chinese truck, didn't understand the instruction manual, and it was in a different language when it like communicated. Someone was cleaning the inside of the truck, closed on them, cycled, no one could do anything.
Fuck.
So, yeah, I'd prefer your strategy. I just didn't think that was the rule. I thought it was the exception.
It's health and safety is a big thing now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
I'm happy. Also, fun fact, anything you recycle goes into the tip.
Yeah, Yeah,
even
I
now.
Believe that. Yep.
Yeah, man. But then they tell you, "Oh, you better clean it." I'm like, "Fuck off! I know what you're doing, boys. Calm down." And girls, you know, they're in there as well.
Well, what used to happen, right? You used to put it in a recycling bin, and then it gets compacted and then shipped off.
Yeah, and sold and burned.
Yeah, but now it's like not the case anymore.
They can't make money on it.
Oh yeah, recycling is just a bit of a
conspiracy. Huh?
I don't know, is it? What do you think?
I think it's good that you recycle. I just don't think we're doing anything worthwhile with it. And when people have a go at me, like, hey, you got to clean out that peanut butter jar. I'm like, no, I don't. Then they put this little thing like, oh, I got this note on our bin that says, oh, you're not meant to put plastic bags into recycling. I'm like, get off your little high horse, brother. I know exactly what you guys are doing. But anyways, that's a story for another day.
I think it's just a feel-good factor for the council feel like, I guess, giving the taxpayers the opportunity, you know, that, oh, hey, you are recycling, but they don't tell you where the end product is going.
Anyone listening here that making you feel like you're making a contribution, you're not. The council's lying to you.
Well, I hope to be proved wrong. Like, if someone from the council picks this up, you know, and say, hey, come out to the recycling plant. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, no, fair. It could have changed. I think the last conversation I had was a year ago. They might have solved it.
Yeah.
So anyone listening on the council, if I'm completely wrong, that's okay. Reach out, ryan@oneplan.co.nz. I'll correct my wrong.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's money, right? Where does the money flow? If it costs more to recycle, then, you know, they've got to run the cost-benefit analysis as the right thing to do.
Sound like an accountant, mate. Did you ever dabble?
Nah. Well, I tried to. But, I mean, even in my industry now, I got to look at accounts.
Do you know what you're passionate about? Like, because I find usually when people aren't doing too well at school, either the way it's taught or the topic isn't interesting. Or it's some set level of insecurity. Like I would... I'm a good learner, but I'm shit at exams.
Yeah.
So, like, because I'm fearful of failing. Like, when I first became an advisor, it's the easiest fucking shit to learn. And I wanted to quit because I was like, oh, I don't think I can do this. So, I said to Greg, he's the business associate, I was like, oh, I think, I don't know if I can do this. And he said, if you fail, we'll just do it again.
Yeah.
I was like, because he was paying for it, which is cool. Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, boom. Then I rinsed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
How'd you get into it then?
So I wanted to learn about investing and finance, and I was making a bit of money selling insurance. So I started running these events called Meaningful Money Making. And I thought if I bring an audience, then I can build a relationship with someone that's like an expert. So I door knocked three places. This was the third one, and said, hey, would you like to speak? Blah, blah, blah. So he spoke, and in a speech, he said, life's too short not to enjoy good wine. So I brought him a bottle of wine to say thank you. And then he asked me, have you ever thought about working in this industry? I was like, no. And he's like, oh, well, pay for your studies, yada, yada, yada. That was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Now I'm an advisor.
So you've been with him for 4 years?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. But insurance would have been a good industry to be in as well if you remained there.
Yeah, I was selling funeral insurance.
Shit.
We put the fun in funeral, so I learned. But I did learn, like, the average funeral costs 10 to 20 grand, and most people don't have that. So it is useful to have, like, a 48-hour payout with your life insurance or have funeral cover. There's less restrictions. But the main thing is it wasn't what I wanted to do. Like, I don't even like finance. The part I like is understanding people and what they want from life and just creating a pathway. And I think I'll get back into insurance because it's just another way to protect them.
Yeah.
So the money conversation is really quick.
Yeah, yeah.
It's easy. Yeah, like most people could do this themselves. Like, but it's just, do they have the emotional fortitude and willingness to learn it? What about you? Why did you get into mortgages?
Similar story, actually, to yours.
Oh, yeah?
Very similar. So what happened was when I finished my contracting job, I went to work for a consultant. The reason why I jumped was because at uni, everything was all theory-based and all calculations. And when I was contracting, I wasn't doing what I thought I'd be doing. So I got into consulting, and then it was already like, I think, three, four years. And I was like, shit, I can't even remember this now. So I had to go back through the theory and then learn all of it. And then at that point, I realized I don't think I can be or want to become an engineer for the next 30, 40 years. And this was down actually at Half Moon Bay. And I was just walking down the boardwalk, and I was like, fuck, that's a really nice car. Like, it was an Audi R8 V10. It wasn't the V8, it was the V10. I was like, fuck, this is nice. And then he had a number plate, and then he had a sign up on the top. I was like, fuck, I'm going to hit this guy up.
Yeah. Oh, so, like fucking, what's that? Wolf of Wall Street? Yeah, like that?
Kind of like that. And then I went back. After that, I walked back into the office, and the first thing I sat down, I Googled the business, and I flicked him an email. I was like, hey, just for business mentorship, maybe once a month. Are you keen? And then didn't hear from him maybe one or two days or maybe a couple of hours, I can't remember. And then he said, yeah, come in for a chat. And that was it. And I didn't realize he was a mortgage broker. And I didn't know what mortgage brokering was, like what sort of work it was, because I thought it was, you know, just get a mortgage. But there's actually quite a bit of skill to it.
Okay. What do you like about it, though? So you found this guy. Now you've got a nice car. I just noticed that as you came in. It might not be your dream car, but it's a good car. Mine's a piece of shit Toyota Camry.
Nah. It's just a car to get you from A to B, you know, yeah, at the end of the day.
You'll get there quick with that, though.
You would. Yeah.
Wait, for the listeners, what is the car? Huh? Some people might give a fuck. I don't, but...
Nah. It's just a car from A to B.
A to V. Okay, yeah. We'll keep it under wraps. Yeah, okay. Safe call. It's a Ferrari.
No, it's not.
What's your dream car? Like, what would you want?
Dream car?
Something, I guess,
probably,
A to C?
Yeah, Ferrari or Lambo.
Ferrari. Or how do you feel when you're sitting in it? Like, what is it about owning it that you want it?
A Ferrari?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just always a childhood dream.
Yeah. Does your dick feel bigger when you're sitting in it?
I don't know. Do you want to sit next to me?
I don't want to assess it, brother. I don't get it. I just want to understand, like, what, does it, like, power, status, like, is it, like, proving that you could do it? Like, what is it?
I think it's just a dream, right? Because when you're a kid, you always see those sort of cars driving around. You're like,
sorry, I haven't recovered from our last yarn, but yeah, carry on, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's just childhood, man.
Did you have a successful or like middle class, upper class, like struggle?
I think middle. Yeah, my parents were hard workers.
Okay.
Ran a bakery.
Savage, bro. Those hours.
Fucking long hours, bro.
Yeah, that's me.
You don't really realize it until A, you start your family, because you need to fucking really bring in bread, ironically. And then and B, the amount of time. Because once you start working or grinding, you just don't have the time to spend with your kids.
Yeah. So was it about optimizing your time and having more balance? Because then you saw your parents like working hard all the time. What hours do they work? Like 4 a.m. to like 7?
6. Yeah, 4 to 6.
Bro, that's mad, eh?
That's crazy, bro. Well, you get to work at 4, but you get around 3:30.
And then you bin everything you made.
Pretty much.
Not allowed to give it to anyone.
Yeah.
Because of health and safety. It's like, yeah, what a waste, bro.
Well, back in the days, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
You used to be able to give it away.
Yeah. Now, what's it like now? You go to give it away and they're like, oh no, it's 2 hours old, you gotta bin it.
I don't know. Yeah, my parents sold their bakery like 10 years ago.
Did they? Yeah. Did they own the premises or no. They had a brand? And
no, it was just a standard Asian bakery that you see around the corner, to be honest. It's either owned by Cambodians or Vietnamese.
Yeah, interesting. What's your heritage?
So my dad's Vietnam, my parents Vietnamese, and then my mom is Chinese, but he's full Chinese. He fled the war and then Vietnam.
How old was he when he left Vietnam?
Don't know, to be honest. He doesn't
you
really
reckon
talk about
10 or 20 or?
Maybe.
Well, how old
actually,
is he?
No, sorry. My dad was born there. What am I on about?
Wait, dad was born where?
In Vietnam, but yeah. My parents are Chinese. Oh, my grandparents are Chinese. So they fled the Chinese War and then they went down to
the... Oh, okay.
Yeah. But then the Vietnam War kicked off and then so he fled that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus. Can't win. So he didn't like hide in a tunnel, eat some ramen noodles?
I don't know. He doesn't really like to talk about it. And
it's hectic, yeah.
That's maybe bringing up traumatic experiences. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm getting a vibe of the house. Hardworking individuals that have high expectation about education and maybe don't want to talk about their feelings.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Most Asian households are.
Are they?
Yeah. Huh.
What do you think, like, if there's someone listening, a young person that might be like you, that had a struggle at school, like it didn't all come together and the parents had that huge expectation? Because you probably would have been pretty, like, hard on yourself. Like, what would your advice be to those?
Just do the things that you like, man.
Do the things you like.
Yeah.
And how do you navigate? Yeah, go.
It is a good question. My parents weren't actually particularly hard.
Hmm.
When I was saying earlier, like, you know, my parents weren't, I guess my friends that were like really pushing for hard education. If you do well, then you're going to get into a good school and yada, yada, yada. My parents weren't really like that. I guess they kind of believed in you.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, but what about the people that didn't have that situation? I'm going to ask that question, then change the camera over. But like, because did you have any friends in that demographic that had the oppressive sort of, you know, like, hey, you need to achieve this and that, as opposed to the lackadaisical white parents that, give them, like, a bronze medal for just participating?
Yeah, so my friend demographic went from, my childhood was pretty relaxed.
Oh, yeah.
All my friends were, you know, most of my friends were actually European, from primary all the way up to intermediate, and then from intermediate, from high school, then it was funny enough, all fucking Asians.
Huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then even into uni, and then that's when I at uni, then I realized that there are some really strict parents out there that got them to where they are.
Yeah. So like those sort of people that you've come across, like just because you know you talked about life skills, and maybe you can't answer the question, maybe you can, but like, that's a common narrative I see, even people in their 40s, 50s, 70s, that are still living the life of the expectation their parents have of them. So I'm just wondering how you navigate doing what you like while not getting caught up in their expectation. I'm just going to change it over while answering.
Go for it.
So just keep talking.
Oh. I think you just got to be comfortable with yourself. You need to know who you are. You need to know what you're doing. Most people who graduate, finish their degree and then get into the workforce, they get comfortable.
Okay.
Income goes up, you know, they buy their house or start a family, and that's all they know.
Mm.
I it's hard. I mean, like we said earlier, I think a lot of people need to like know what they're really thinking. I don't think a lot of people think for themselves.
Hmm. So I guess getting clear on what you want and experimenting, because I find it's quite hard. A lot of people don't have purpose or don't know how to find it. I think we had a podcast guest, Grant. He's like the HR for a major fast-moving goods or fast-moving consumers.
Yeah.
Fuck it, it's Mars.
Yeah.
he was just mindful of not like advertising that.
Yeah.
But like that, we're not talking about this episode anymore. So he had 70% of people weren't happy in their job.
Yeah.
Global survey.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, things are so expensive, right? What can you do? Even if you try to pivot to another industry, it's so hard.
Hmm.
I mean, fucking inflation is 6 or 7%. Minimum wage just barely covers food these days. That's hard.
So you think that's the driver? Like that situationally, they can't afford to not keep the secure job?
I think so, yeah. And people are tight. Like, I mean, I don't know about you, but after you finish work, you know, the last thing you want is to like think about trying to find other sources of money. You just want to spend time with your family. And then by the time you realize it's already 10, 11 o'clock, you're like, fuck, I need to get back into the grind again.
Yeah. Well, I think a good distinction in that is that, like, imagine you're playing a character that's not you your whole life. And how much energy that saps, because for you to keep up the front and to keep the mask, that's different from you enjoying the work and like letting yourself go and be vulnerable. Because I feel tired when I get home recently, because I've been waking up at 6 and I used to wake up at 10.
Yeah.
But other than that, like I have time to like do things. I don't have a family, so that's a different kettle of fish. But what are your thoughts on like the mask that people wear in life? I know we should probably talk about mortgages, but
that's all right.
Cognitive dissonance, it's called.
Man, you're really well read, eh?
Thank you. It's all about pretending, mate.
No. Oh, is that the mask?
Yes, that's my mask. Pretend to know something.
Well, I mean, to be fair, even if you find the purpose in life that you think you know what you want to do, there's a lot of times that you don't. Even I fool myself. I might sound like I know what the fuck I'm doing in my life. Deep down, I go to bed, I'm just like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, facts.
I'll be straight up. And then you've got to plan for the next day as well. So I think you just got to be grounded to know what you're really doing. Because in the big scheme of things, like, okay, well, I'm doing this for basically my kids. Hmm. Before I had or started a family, it was just all about having fun. Yeah.
Well, the challenge, like, imagine your kids from now, like, because there's a fine line between being grounded and secure, but imagine the legacy that you leave your children is, hey, maintain security. Dad's not happy in his job. He's doing it for us when all we wanted was dad.
Yeah.
Because there's a fine line between, because things are challenging to a point. I don't have a mortgage and kids, so I'm not sure the cost there. But for the most part, you know, 60 grand is comfortable enough if you're not, you know, wasting money. The mortgage might be quite challenging. Maybe you need another income or when they're working from home, but you can find a way. So I'm just wondering, like if with your, how many kids do you have?
One. Yeah.
Son, daughter?
Son.
Son, we won't go into any more detail than that. I honestly, like, when I have a family, a wife and kid, I'm just not going to mention them because I think fame is salt water for the thirsty. I don't even want to do this. Yeah. I just think it's the best way to get there. What would be, like, the legacy for your son that you would want either value set or for their life that you'd want to leave as a legacy?
I think hard work.
Hard work.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think... And resilient grit. You know, if things get hard, you just got to push through and just don't give up. I think a lot of people give up or find easy ways out. Okay. It comes back down to that, you know, that shortcut that I'm saying that you mentioned before. I think as kids, you know, you do find ways to get things you want. And the easiest way, the quickest shortcut when you have kids, you realize is that they throw a tantrum and they really push how far they can take it. And if they don't have the skill to learn how to control that temper or that tantrum to get things that they want in the future, then it flows onto adult life as well.
Hmm. So question on that. If you had a son that was hardworking and resilient but didn't have a fulfilling life and wasn't happy, would you still hold those values in the same esteem?
Sure, that's really good. Depends on what his overall position is, if he has a family or not at that time.
Okay.
If he hasn't, then I'll tell him to probably switch it up.
Interesting. So in an essence, you're sacrificing your own happiness for the greater good of the family.
Yeah. It's actually very, maybe it's an Asian culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I read a really good book. Have you heard of Ray Dalio?
Yeah. Principles, is that the book you
That one, but he just released a really good one called Not Big Debt Crisis, Changing World Order. And he's why nations rise and fall throughout history. And he did a really good comparison between, I guess, the Western and Eastern cultures.
Okay.
And it's a very top-down approach for Eastern nations or Eastern cultures, and then Western cultures is bottom up, so democracy and like individualism, like you create your own path and all that. Whereas on Eastern culture, it's more top down, so like you do it for the group, the collective in this case, or what you just said was the family.
Well, then the challenge becomes like so like social psychology, I looked up, you know, there's like, say, Japan, there's a lot more other concern, and there's I think there's a lack of community in Western culture. It's dangerous to generalize everything, but I think, you know, like even the minorities within each country have a lot more of a stronger family unit, whereas, you know, you see us and they're just abandoned their, you know, parents in some rest home.
Like, no, I don't think so.
It's not that bad, but like, but just
I know what you're saying. Yeah,
like there saying, is yeah. that there is a more doing things for the collective as opposed to for the individual.
Yeah,
I don't saying it's everyone. It's just some savages. But then the challenge becomes like, so let's say with the kid, your son, you're financially providing for them and showing the values of hard work, but what if that mindset is at the expense of them? You know, so like you're actually helping them financially at the expense of fulfillment, because you're modeling a type of behavior that they'll replicate, and then they'll have their family, and then they'll start living their life when they're, well, I guess then you got to look after your parents. So you just don't stop.
You just don't stop. You're exactly right. You don't. And so, I'll give some financial backing to my son, but I'm going to make sure that he works hard for the money as well. It's not going to be his all my hard work, and you can, you know, take all the assets or whatever, do whatever you want.
Well, put it this way, if you had no responsibilities, no fear, and all the money in the world, what would you be doing right now?
Travel.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, travel, read, explore, talk to people.
And
it's like all about experiences, right?
Yeah.
Because you can't take anything. You can't take anything material to your grave.
Okay.
You know, it's just like when you asked about that car. It's not about having the biggest dick in or driving in it. It's about the experience. You know, it's when you're in it. I'm not trying to satisfy anyone. I'm as there for an experience, for a moment to enjoy my life.
So, okay, let's say you're living these... I feel like I'm psychoanalyzing you, so we can move on to
that. You're like you're just breaking down my values. And now I'm questioning my value system as well. I'm just like, fuck, have I got it right? But this is good. It makes me also reflect on my own thinking as well.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. You know, I'm learning from these... it's an exploration of truth is what I'm trying to... So let's say you got these experiences that you're having.
Yeah.
There's a hypothesis I'm working on in terms of what people's purpose is, because that would be cool if that was part of our offerings, like helping people find purpose and fulfillment. And it seems to link to when people were younger, they either had a strong emotional experience where they had an impact, even if it wasn't traumatic in comparison to others, but it had a big impact on them. And then when they see that throughout their life, whether it's like someone that can't express themselves, whether it's someone that felt inadequate because their family couldn't support, or maybe their father was very like domineering and like angry, so they took on the more of a passive role in trying to support and empower people. So using that as like a hypothesis, what do you think would be something, a person in the world that you would get most value helping? Like you'd feel alive helping that certain issue.
So at the moment, my biggest joy is actually helping people get into their first homes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you're actually doing what you love?
Yeah, I actually do. Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So what about helping people into their first home do you like find the most rewarding?
It's the Kiwi dream, isn't it?
The Kiwi dream, yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, it is getting a lot harder, you know, when parents were... saying that you guys have it pretty good because interest rates are so low, and then when you compare it to what they purchased at, even at the high interest rate, it's still affordable. Back then you didn't have to work, or two parents go to work at the same job to get the mortgage you want.
Yeah.
Now you have to work two jobs full time. Even the low interest rates are super low, but you know, house prices are crazy.
Yeah, well, it's relative to income. What was it like? 6 times income back in the day. Now it's fucking way out the game.
It's so out there, man.
It used to be 12, but now it's way off that, eh?
Well, that's actually, I think...
20? 20 times income?
Something
in
high.
In Auckland anyways.
Yeah, something stupid high. I mean, that's what happens when you print so much money, right?
Yeah, quantitative easing, which is just an exchange of numbers on a spreadsheet.
Pretty much.
You know, they use COBOL, well, I don't know if New Zealand does, but a lot of institutional groups use COBOL code, which is like 360-odd like symbols and characters, and it's kind of like you're typing like an essay, and it's really slow and inefficient, but they just keep it up because, you know, inertia.
What's that for?
That's what most financial institutions use as their means of like storing information, processing transactions. Right. Yeah. They're moving away from it, but it's just prehistoric.
Sure.
Bring in the blockchain. I'm not a coder. I just, you know.
Bring in the blockchain.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on cryptocurrency?
I think it's the future.
Oh, okay. Tell me more.
I don't know enough about it, but I think the tech behind it, the blockchain being decentralized, so no one has control over it, I think is pretty good. Yeah. I mean, but I don't know if we'll go and get there. I think the blockchain tech is going to be involved in most countries.
Mm.
So, for example, I think we're not going to move. We're not going to have paper money anymore. Everything's going to be on the blockchain. I think governments are going to try to control the currency. If you control money, you control power, right? Or you have power.
Well, like Ukraine at the moment.
Probably, yeah.
Because, like, what do they do? They're trying to do the Russia. They had the SWIFT arrangement where, you know, like the financial institutions, you know, like when you get a SWIFT code, when you're trying to like transfer money, it's like this agreement to use it a certain way. And, you know, they're removing Russia from that. And Ukraine's ability through cyber attacks from Russia has been impaired. So they're actually using crypto recently. They posted on Twitter, donate crypto.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. What are your thoughts on Ukraine and Russia? Should we talk about mortgages?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about it. I think any war is bad. So, yeah.
You know, the craziest thing, no horrible thing that's done in history has ever been done for bad reasons.
Mm.
So what I mean by that is like they pivot it. Like, you know, you look at how and people that aren't vaccinated are being treated at the moment, and it's not for bad reasons. It's because they're standing between the health and humanity of New Zealand.
Yeah.
So this justifies our action.
Well, it's like the collective, right?
The collective. That top-down culture. It's the Eastern fault, really, isn't it? No, I'm just kidding. Whoa. Nah. Cancelled. I just got cancelled. I think everyone listening to this.
But you are right. Like, they make decisions based on what information they have at the time. But what people should also realize, and that's the thing with all, I think, governments, is if they get that sort of information and they realize that it may not be right, they don't actually come out and say that they're wrong. They still continue for some reason push the agenda. Yeah. I don't know why.
Well, if you ever try to win an argument with someone, it doesn't happen for the most part. They just go home feeling stupid.
Yeah.
Or they agree and they have some level of self-awareness. But it is like if you attack someone in their most fortified position, you get the greatest level of resistance. So in selling, I don't know, have you ever heard of third-party examples? So the best way to actually solve an objection, because I did commission-only selling and training for ages, so I love it.
Yeah.
So essentially, when you're talking to a prospect, you ask them questions that collect information to do your presentation, but also find out what they're going to use as an objection.
Yeah.
And you start solving it before they ever present it. And you do that by describing a client that you have that has a similar experience to them.
Yeah.
And then what they're doing is finding a solution themselves without getting the emotional resistance.
So you're priming them.
You're priming them. You're just solving it without less conflict, you know. You're being empathetic by being a manipulative fuck. Nah, it is. I think essentially sales is just like charisma and empathy.
Yeah, you're solving their problems in a way.
Yeah, so what are your thoughts? How do people get ready with the triple CFA? For anyone that's listening, it's this new lending law that was just strategically thought out for decades and just perfectly implemented and has no impact on anyone.
Yeah. Before we go into that, did I answer your question before?
I can't even remember what it was.
Something about hardworking.
Yeah.
And I just said that. Was it? I can't even remember my answer.
Well, I was asking like hard work and resilience and instilling that values in your son. Do you worry about the impact that has in terms of like they're modeling a behavior that won't bring them happiness?
Yeah, probably.
So what would be a happy medium, you know? Like
none, he has to learn.
It's on him. Cutthroat, eh?
I think you have to, because if you become too soft or you try to always cater to why they're always upset, then they don't have an out.
Hmm.
They don't know how to cope. And if they're always thinking that their parents are going to always help them, then it sets them up for failure in the future.
Mm, so interesting. So here's the concept in psychology is called co-regulation. So what usually happens when a child develops antisocial behavior is through a lack of co-regulation of their emotions with their parents.
Mm.
So actually there's two things. One, they watch what you do. Two, they use you as a means to medicate their emotions.
Yeah.
But you got to be mindful of it doesn't lead to a dependency. But if you're modeling vulnerability and expression and that it's okay to have certain emotions, and then when they have certain emotions, allowing them to be and co-regulating them, but teaching them how to do it themselves as well, then it's like a more well-adjusted child.
Mm.
So your motivation to not make them soft like me, you know, this little whingy, like I play victim all the time.
Well, I mean, you're self-aware. You're going to be a great parent because you know so much of the psychology stuff.
Yeah, it's say I'm so much easier to run someone else's company. You know what I mean?
That's true. Well, I mean, at the time before I had my son, I thought, parenting was pretty easy because my parents had 4 kids.
Uh-huh.
And then when my son came, it's a lot harder than you think. Yeah.
Well, the biggest, I guess, takeaway, and I imagine that that's very much true. But the biggest takeaway I think worth considering is are you doing the resilient and hardworking thing for you, or are you doing it for your son? Because you might be doing the need to prove yourself or establish yourself in the world or feel like you're not letting them down for insecurities or your experiences at the expense of their happiness and fulfillment.
Fuck. That's deep, man.
Yeah. We haven't talked about mortgages. So you think about that and we'll go on to... we're almost done too. So we've been talking about mortgages. I don't know what I'm going to title this.
Yeah. Fuck, that's deep. I don't know.
Just think on it, just because I find, you know, like, because you're trying, like, I use the distinction between niceness and kindness. So most people, it's easy to be nice, but they're being nice for the positive reaction instead of actually the benefit of the person.
Mm.
And sometimes being kind is being cruel.
Yep.
So you're instilling these amazing values in your son. Because it's been your framework to approach life, and you've probably seen people that have contrary beliefs that don't work out too well because they can't handle the severity of life, so they need resilience and hard work because the world is cold and dark. But then that also impairs people's ability to connect, to be vulnerable, and to pursue things that might not lead to security.
Mm.
So there's benefits to it, but there's also a cost.
Yeah. It's just like anything, right? Similar to... interest rates on mortgages.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you pick, it's either you pick the 1 or 2 year for certain for value, but then you pay a little bit more for certainty. There's always a up and a downside on each.
It's true. I guess it's yeah. Now we'll move on. I feel like I'm just gonna unpack your whole life. Well, on the mortgages, because we've got about 10 minutes before this wraps up, what would be, like, how can people prepare themselves? Like, how are you finding, like, when they're applying for loans, what are the pushback that you're getting and that sort of thing? Like, what leads to a fail?
At the moment, it is the triple CFA. The banks are really trying to understand how one spends their money. And it's kind of bad in a way how it's pushing people to use more cash and hide, right? And I was like, oh, I'm just going to pay everything by cash. Not really actually giving the ability to, I guess, the customer to readjust their spending as if they do already have a mortgage.
Hmm.
For example, the reason why the banks ask for 90 days bank statements is not for you to like hide 3 months worth of spending. I think there is a bit of thinking or psychology behind it, is because normally it takes 3 months to build any habits, 90 days, similar to what the challenge that you're doing.
Yeah, you're crossing.
Yeah. And so if you can prove to the bank that, you know, you are managing well over 90 days, then the bank is going to adjust and say, okay, you're good, decent with money, or you can manage money well, save it or invest it. The whole triple CFA has completely flipped it upside down, where I think it's a bit, it removes, like, it feels like they don't believe in people have any common sense or how to spend their own money. They're trying to, you know, impose rules, I guess, for them to...
You're babying them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the word. I'm trying to find the right word for it. Yeah, yeah. It's people work because they want to have fulfillment and enjoyment. But then, you know, it's like you're trying to push them to not spend any money at all.
Mm.
It's like, well, what's the point of life?
Yeah. So what are the things they look for? Like, I know, like, they mean, like, lay by, you know, like, pay, like, you pay it later, sort of arrangements aren't good. If you get an unplanned overdraft, it's not too good. If you have a certain category of spending, they're not a big fan of. The main objective is, is the loan fit for purpose and can they afford it now and in the future? Is
pretty
it,
much.
And basically it's because payday loans were like ripping people off.
Yeah.
And they're just sort of like, all right, we'll just, you know, blanket every lending. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything like they could do in preparation?
treat as if you're already paying for a mortgage.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And just tidy up all your debts and shit. Like,
yeah, tidy up all your debts. Even if you have a little bit of debt, you will potentially still have the ability to take on a mortgage even if you have short-term debt. Mm. I mean, I've helped customers that have only 10% deposit and have around about 20-30K in short-term debt, but their income was reasonable to cover it. As long as you can prove to the bank that you can do it, then it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. Have you heard of first-time partnership? Dude, you know, this would be good for you. But, I'm not sure if the camera would turn off. But basically, the first home partnership is this new initiative by the government in the last few months. And it's a $100 million fund. And if people don't have enough of a deposit, the government buys part of the house.
Oh, it's like a shared ownership then.
Yeah, shared ownership agreement. And then you got 15 years to pay it back. And then it's based on the value of the house as it grows over time. So I won't ask you about it.
I'll make a small comment on that. I've seen instances where, it did help people get into ownership, but it didn't give them much of an exit strategy.
Yeah.
You really need to get a lawyer to look over that contract, is all I can say. It's really hard. There's like fees on top of fees to get out. I mean, I only saw a couple. It might not be the same for this first partnership or whatever.
Well, just on that, the different agreements, I'll keep this rolling a little bit longer and I'll just change the camera over again. But what are your thoughts on different ownerships, like that shared property agreement or property syndication, or like sort of mistakes people fall into when they go into partnership with people, or like parents fighting for their kids, what they should look out for, you know? So just roll with that and I'll change it over.
I think you definitely need to... just looking at that wine bottle. You definitely need to have a good lawyer to read over the contracts and understand the benefits of getting into something like that for both parties, and need an independent lawyer as well, I would recommend. So maybe two different lawyers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thoughts on property developments?
I think it's good.
Okay.
If you've got the funds to do it.
Do you get nervous about like the next cycle and then they brought something and...
No. Yeah. I think, it depends how big the property developer is.
Okay.
If you, it's just like with anything. If you know your risks and you can control the risk that you're getting yourself into, for example, when you run your numbers, it all comes down to numbers. If you're buying a property to develop on, and you ran the numbers based on this cycle, then I think you're going to be in a lot of shit.
Okay.
So you got to always work on the worst case. It's just like if you're investing in anything. Well, what is the purpose of you're investing in this? And that's the actual thing when people get into property investing, is they don't understand what the purpose is. Like, why are you getting into property investing? There's so many other investment vehicles that may be actually better than property investing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the numbers you use, the conservative numbers for like a property? 7%, like the bank, or?
Yeah, and also what the potential end value is. So if I'm running numbers, for example, I'm developing or a client that wants to develop, then we'll always work on what is the worst case scenario to sell at this property? What is the break-even cost? And is it even worth developing? Yeah. And then you got to run through what is the construction cost at the time? And then plus contingency. The bank's already building a contingency anyway, but you should be building a contingency. Yeah.
Okay. What about rental property? What do you do with the process of that?
Again, comes down to numbers.
Okay.
It's all about the yield, but with the whole game that's changed, you really should be speaking to your mortgage advisor or broker. It's not where it used to be, where mum and dad used to own a home, go to the bank, get equity out, and buy an investment property. That used to be the case. Now it's completely changed. No interest deductibility. It's a lot harder. Everyone's going to be negatively geared. Yeah.
Everyone.
I think.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say everyone. Majority of homes are going to be. Well, you're buying homes at over, six or seven figures, and interest rates are now going in the opposite direction, going up. So you got to think of what is the worst case. Can you actually afford it? If you're already struggling to put food on the table when you're trying to get yourself into an investment property, it's like, I don't think that's a good idea.
That's mad, eh? Because there's a lot of changes, like getting rid of tenants is harder. You know, you used to be able to claim depreciation way back. Now you can only claim depreciation and chattels. You got healthy home standards. If your heat pump doesn't have enough watts, you're fucked.
Yeah. That's investing in residential property now, it's fucking hard.
What's your advice to people that are in it to minimize it? Do they go interest only for a period of time? Do they just be conscious? Like even Brightline tests. Oh, we'll never increase it to 10 years. Surprise.
Yeah.
If you want to flip your house in 10 years, you got to pay one of the highest capital gains tax in the world, even though it's not a capital gains tax.
Yep. Run your numbers.
Numbers.
Is it just a numbers game?
Do you have like something for people that can use a spreadsheet?
Yeah, I got a spreadsheet that I use with my customers or my clients that want to get into investing in property.
Do you have like an offering? Like people, if they download this link, they can get a spreadsheet?
Nah.
Stitcher.
Nah.
You missed out an opportunity there.
Nah, well, it's... Well, my biggest joy is still first home buyers. Investing property is just, I guess, an offshoot from once you get your first home, 2 or 3 years, then you start looking at those options. Yeah, but it's hard, man. That's all I can say.
What's your top tips for first home buyers then?
Top tips? Getting a deposit ready. limit your spending. Find a side hustle, unfortunately.
Side hustle. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I think a salary income now, it's not going to cut it. If you really want to get into your home, pick something else up, pick another skill.
Does the income like contribute? Like, so you got a side hustle, and I imagine because it's the income's more fluctuates, the bank doesn't hold it in the highest esteem.
Yeah, scale back. But if you can show a pretty good trend over the years, I mean, if it takes you already 2 years to build up a 10% deposit, then you've got 2 years to also work on the side hustle as well to build it up. Then you can show to the bank, hey, I'm paying taxes on the side hustle. Maybe you don't take the full 100% of the profit, scale it back to 50 or 60%. This is something maybe your mortgage advisor will go through anyway.
Huh. So, and is that because my understanding, I know nothing about mortgages, but it's round about 6 times your income?
Some banks are 6 times.
So essentially, one, you're trying to demonstrate good spending habits with the new triple CFA. Two, you're also trying to increase your income. So then your serviceability is better.
Yeah.
And then you're consolidating debt and getting rid of like lay-by and all that sort of stuff.
Yep. I think the biggest thing is just to delay your gratification on things until you buy. And it comes back down to purpose, right? Why are you buying a home? You could rent, right? And then you can invest the difference.
Do you find a lot of people are just buying homes because that's the Kiwi dream as opposed to their dream?
I think it's 50-50, actually.
Okay.
Some people buy homes because they've been told to buy it or their peers are buying it.
Hmm.
Yeah. I still deep down think that buying a home, a roof over your head, is better than renting.
Yeah.
The reason being is then at least you can control the outcome. You're not always being told to, I'm deciding to sell, and it's like, shit, I got to move. And then, like, the rent's gone up, I don't know, depending on how long you've been in that place, and it's gone up again, and you got to find another property. I don't know if your flatmates are going to move with you. It's just a nightmare.
True. Yeah. And it all comes down to value, seeing what you want. I think, you know, there's a book, The Way of a Superior Man, and it talks about live as though your father's dead, which is a bit cold, but, like, in the sense that their expectations and what they want from you and their insecurities about your success... Put that to the side.
Yeah.
I've been working on a supportive model for those people in first homes where you use a combination of a managed fund and KiwiSaver with a 5 to 7 year window.
Yep.
So then you have your money working harder and your deposits higher.
Yeah.
Because the challenge you face, you put your money in a term deposit, you're losing minus 3.9% a year, give or take, because you take inflation off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, house prices are going up by 6.6% over 20 years. So you're like, shit.
That's actually a really good strategy, helping people like that.
Is that what you do? Do you have like what if people come to see you and they're like, oh, I need more time because my deposit's not there. What do you do there?
I just tell them straight up that you got to build up your deposit or increase your, or if it's not deposit, then it's an income serviceability thing. You need to increase your income, fortunately.
Huh. Surely you must refer people though.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I refer them to people who, you know, help with KiwiSaver or an investment. Or if it's something like debt, then, you know, you consolidate all your debt first.
Yeah. Oh, so there's a debt consolidator expert.
Well, you can do it yourself.
Oh, yeah.
But most people would just go to the bank to consolidate their debt or, you know, maybe not, instead of finding another lender to find the best deal. People nowadays just want convenience. That's why it's Afterpay, all these buy now, pay later type things. It's convenience.
Mm.
You're just delaying payment, really. It's just another way of a credit card.
Fair. Well, speaking of convenience, as we wrap this up, how do, like, the first home buyers listening to this, not sure where to start, confused if they've got all the right things going, like, how do they find you? Well, how does it work? Well, that's the sale. sell it to us.
They can just go to my website and there's a booking page and it's always a 10-minute phone call. And we'll just be running through the numbers.
Okay. Yeah. And then obviously,
if I can't help you then I'll guide you or refer you to someone that could put you on that path and then we touch base again. Or sometimes we do set up and plan and I'll say, let's touch base in 6 months. This is what I want you to do, or this is what you should be doing in preparation for buying it first time, whether it is spending habits. For example, customers sometimes will send through like 3 months bank statements and I'll have a look and I was like, yeah, we should probably wait, rework it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right, so yeah, they look it up, they push the button, automatically books in your Calendly,
Yeah, Calendly. Yeah. Calendly?
Yeah, that's how you say. Yeah. Anyone listening to this, if you want to set up a free automated booking service, Calendly,
yeah,
you can pay for it too, but I don't.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think if you work for a one-man band, it's
worth free. Yeah, one-man band. Yeah, like as long as you don't have other users, one appointment.
Yeah. But I don't work by myself anyway. I do work with a group of other advisors as well. So I'm under Simply Finance.
A
good bunch of guys as well. So if I can't help them, then I'll refer them to another colleague that can help.
And you get
you, time.
It costs nothing because you get paid by the provider that you refer, like the provider that you recommend in terms of the bank or
correct. If there is fees involved, I always tell my clients up front.
Oh, when is their fees?
I
didn't know that.
Yeah, well, it depends. Some advisors don't. So, for example, if the certain lending amount isn't up to a certain percentage or certain amount, for example, 250,
yeah,
250k, then obviously there's a fee involved. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's up to the customer to decide if they want to use my services.
Oh, got it. So it's basically for the people that may not be able to qualify, but you still got to make something off your time.
Oh, no. So the phone calls are free.
Yeah.
But it's just if we do go ahead and the loan amount that you're wanting is not a huge amount, for whatever reason it may be, then because it just doesn't cover my time cost.
Okay. What would you charge? I know that's
depends.
It depends.
Various. Yeah, varies.
Is it thousands or hundreds?
No, only hundreds.
Oh yeah. That's fair enough. Cool. I just put you on the spot. Yeah. It's good. Like
No. I'm always transparent. Like when I run my so how it works is we do the 10-minute 10-minute phone call, and if it takes us to the next stage of actually helping you, then it's a full 1 hour sit down via Zoom or face to face of breakdown how actually banks approve lending, and then run their numbers on through it as well.
Yeah.
And then from there, we just take it to the next step.
It's so easy. Then, like, people get... Hey, you go, sorry.
And then I also tell them, like, how much I'll be earning.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm fully transparent. I'm not trying to hide how much I earn.
Yeah. I've seen your car, so...
It's a shitty car, man. It's not actually that fucking nice, bro.
I have no idea. It just looked pretty. That's all I know. All right, cool. It's quite interesting. Maybe I'll conclude it in a segment that's like, all right, sell it. Let's see what happens. But I think, you know... The people I come across from a mortgage standpoint, they don't necessarily understand the structures, the process. If someone gets paid from the underlying provider, it's a good setup.
But most of the time, I would say 99%. That's the case. It's only so much, like if you're doing development funding or if you're flipping houses, there's, you know, I don't know if have any of your previous guests have talked about commission clawback.
Nah, don't even know what that is. Too long. We're at the end.
No, it's just that like there's a certain period within within like a certain time frame, depending on which bank as well. Yeah,
they'll take back the money that
they'll take back the money.
Was it a year, 2 years?
Depends on the lenders. Yeah, it depends on the lenders.
Huh. Rep A, and you put all this time, effort, and then they're like, oh, hey, yo, how do they take the money back if they've already paid you it? Or just don't pay you in the next
one? They actually send you an invoice.
Wow. Okay, charming. So you got to always have something on the side, just be ready. Okay, this went way off. People probably stopped listening the last 20 minutes, but I'll leave a link in the description for the website, I guess, that makes sense. Or the booking tool.
Yeah.
Minimal friction.
Whatever.
We'll put your Calendly link in there, right?
Yeah, whatever. Whatever's easiest. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Thanks.
I enjoyed it. We didn't talk much about finance. It was fun.
Yeah, I felt like it was a more psychological breakdown of my life.
Yeah.